America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day where there's yet another high-profile trial unfolding. No, not of the killer yet, who will be tried as an adult despite his age. That is the decision of the prosecutors in Oakland, Michigan. The high-profile trial is of the actor Jussie Smollett, I'm not sure which he prefers. It doesn't really matter because he's under trial on some very serious charges. And two brothers arrested for an alleged attack on Jussie Smollett recounted for the Chicago police how the former star of Empire on TV orchestrated the hoax. Yeah, a hate crime hoax. And I wonder if most of America even realizes that the entire thing has now been extraordinarily well exposed, with most of the perpetrators, everybody except for Mr. Smollett himself, saying that the hate crime where he went out to get a chicken sandwich in the middle of the night and he was allegedly assaulted by two guys in MAGA hats who put a noose around his neck and beat him up a little bit. And okay, none of this happened. So what's the significance? The significance is that it looks like he's going to be able to get away with it. They're predicting that he will be convicted because he's certainly guilty as could be. But he will only have a serve probation, which means maybe he will be asked to do some community service. I can't imagine what that would be. Wilfred Riley has done a phenomenal job writing a book about hate crime hoaxes, and he found more than 400 of them, and talks about their impact on race relations. Wilfred Riley is a professor at Kentucky State University, frequent guest of this show. His book, Hate Crime Hoax, How the Left is Selling a Fake Race War, is posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. Professor Riley, great to speak to you.
Great to be back on the show, as always.
Well, thank you. What have you been watching some of the probably have seen at least some of the updates on the trial of Jussie Smollett. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I've been almost unable to avoid it. As you mentioned, I wrote the book Hate Crime Hoax, and I'm pretty active on Twitter, Facebook, so on. So people have been sending me updates and tagging me in posts from the courthouse and so on, if they're in the law or they're cops in Chicago. What do I think about this? I think it's good that there's going to be a trial. I mean, this is something that's taken 2-3 years to resolve now. I agree with you. There's not much to say from a legal analyst perspective, although I did go to law school, because he's clearly guilty as sin. I mean, his signature is on checks to the two, as it turned out, Nigerian guys that he paid to impersonate Trump supporters. They have said that he paid them to impersonate Trump supporters. As I recall, this whole thing is now on video. They finally got the moment where he was quote-unquote attacked. They got the guys, the Olson Dario brothers, in the store buying, you know, red hats in the Chicago suburbs. So I'm not really sure what Smollett's defense is going to be here. I mean, he seems to be BSing wildly, essentially. But I have no doubt that, as you said, he'll be convicted on at least 2 or 3 of the charges and sentenced to probation. It's just silly that this became so ridiculous and it took this long to get resolved.
Why is this particular crime and this particular trial? And you're right, the amazing thing is he insisted, it was his idea, that the people who should be beating him up would be wearing Make America Great Again red hats. Does it show something about how unbelievably stupid he assumes that people on the right may be, that that actually you would be doing something like this that would make your side look pretty bad? Or does he want us to believe that people who support Donald Trump automatically think it's a great thing to beat up a black gay star just because he's black and gay?
Well, I think that this trial became such a lodestone for the country because it's such a contrast between what a lot of people believe and reality. And I'm sure if you look at QAnon and so on, there's some crazy fantasy on the right as well. But this is really illustrative. What this guy said was that in the sort of the core of his own power, in the club district in Chicago as a black gay popular man, he was attacked by these racists who called him out by name and who understood the show he was on, because Empire is obviously very popular with deep rural Trump supporters, you know. But, I mean, and they attacked him. He fought as bravely as he could, but there was nothing he could do. A noose was placed around his neck. And a large, large number of Americans treated this as a very serious allegation. I mean, the idea was, yeah, you can't go anywhere in Chicago or Detroit without being attacked by a Klansman. And I think that on the right, this became symbolic of something else, that a lot of the media, a lot of the celebrity elite in the country seems to be continually pushing forward this narrative that's absurd and ridiculous, and that has nothing to do with the real but very residual racism we see today. So for the first couple of weeks of this, it was kind of a horse race to see which narrative would win. And the narrative that won is the second one, because it's real. I mean, of course the story's ridiculous. And yeah, I mean, when you say, does he assume that, I think even people on the left, but does he assume that people are biased enough or dumb enough to buy this? I think he did.
No, I was actually talking about people on the right. In other words, if you want somebody to impersonate somebody else, and you're assuming that somebody else you're impersonating, you have to assume that the other person you're trying to impersonate is basically mentally impaired. Because why would you... In other words, like wearing a campaign button while you're doing something illegal. And what's the deal?
No, that's very well put, actually. So, I mean, I guess what I was saying is he had to assume that the left-wing media would swing far enough into his camp that they would pick this
up
and they would
eat it
up. But, yeah, but so you're saying that he also assumed that right-wingers, that's interesting, he also assumed right-wingers were stupid enough to do this. So that's an interesting point. I've thought of Jesse Smollett as a pure con man, like someone who took a crazy story and sold it to hacks, basically, on morning MSNBC and so on. But at some level, you're probably right. He assumes that this is out there, that this is common enough that it would be plausible. So there's kind of a vicious feedback loop there. If you consume the fringe of media on either side, especially on the left, you believe crap that's just not real, and that affects your behavior. And I think that's why so many of these hate crime hoaxes, last line, involve things like a noose or Klan robes. People really still believe that 1950s era of racial conflict, not even 1970s, is still there just below the surface. But in reality, that's completely unreal. Not even the biggest bigots in the country are lynching black men or attacking gays in the heart of major cities, this kind of thing. So Smollett made this assumption. The assumption was wrong, and that's why he got caught.
Is there, it's one of these things that people who label themselves social justice warriors, when you think about a lot of the efforts that they have undergone, for instance, to remove statues of Theodore Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln, and yes, of Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee as well. And I don't think, by the way, it's ridiculous to equate that group of people. But is there any evidence at all that race relations have improved in areas where statues have been taken down?
No, again, that's an interesting question. So this gets into what's called the diversity training fallacy, sometimes in serious business, serious political science. We hear a lot about diversity, equity, and inclusion right now. And I think most people have seen the data, you know, 7 or 8 or 10% of people are still racist. This is true for blacks as well as whites, by the way. But everyone wants to fix that. And so there's the temptation to do something. Okay, let's take down the symbol. Let's put everyone on the sales floor through the training. But the question that you should ask, as you just did, is does this do anything? Oh, no, of course there's no sign that taking down statues of Stonewall Jackson makes black and white people get along better. It probably makes them get along worse.
Well, the entire argument, it seems to me, has been negative for our race relations. And by the way, you hear about that fake race war? That's in the book by Wilfred Riley, Hate Crime Hoax. It's must reading. We will be right back. Well, it's been a great opportunity today to talk to some of the smartest people out there, people like Al Mohler, like Ross Douthat of the New York Times, like Professor Wilfred Riley, Damon Linker. You got to give some balance, right? So how about the latest constitutional interpretation and constitutional innovation from Joy Behar of The View? She has actually one of the dumbest ideas yet put forward in this little moment of controversy. Here she is from ABC TV.
You know, when the founding fathers were busy with the amendments, the first and second amendments did not have AR-15s in there, mm-hmm. weapons of war, mm-hmm. and they didn't have Twitter. So both amendments, I think, need to be tweaked a little bit.
They need to be tweaked. Can we hear that again? She wants the amendments, First and Second Amendment, to be tweaked to accommodate AR-15s. And what, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged except for AR-15s? Is that what she wants them to put in there? Let's listen again, because this is just, first of all, it's not so easy to tweak those amendments. Here's Joy Behar one more time.
You know, when the founding fathers were busy with the amendments, the First and Second Amendments did not have AR-15s in there, mm-hmm. weapons of war, mm-hmm. and they didn't have Twitter. So both amendments, I think, need to be tweaked a little bit.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Okay, one can only imagine how they would tweak the First Amendment. And there's another First Amendment issue that came up that hasn't been getting much attention, but it's kind of interesting. Reported by Adam Liptak in the New York Times in a sidebar. There are three flagpoles in front of Boston City Hall. One flies the American flag. Okay, that's legal. The second flies the flag of Massachusetts. Believe it or not, despite what the state of Massachusetts, the colony of Massachusetts Bay, did to the Pequot Indians, that's still legal. What appears on the third flag is at issue in a case the Supreme Court is going to hear in January. Oh, great. They go from abortion to the third flagpole in front of Boston City Hall. That flagpole, which ordinarily flies the flag of Boston, is occasionally made available to groups seeking to celebrate their backgrounds or to promote causes like gay pride. In a 12-year period, the city has approved 284 requests for the third flag. Okay, so far so good. What's the problem? It rejected only one application from Camp Constitution. And you know, can't make this stuff up. Okay, you're accepting all these flags and it's gay pride, but you're not going to accept Camp Constitution. Camp Constitution says its purpose is to enhance our understanding of our Judeo-Christian moral heritage. They won't accept the flag? Well, here's the problem. Here it comes. You ready? The group's application said it sought to raise a Christian flag for 1 hour at an event that would include short speeches by some local clergy focusing on Boston's history. Okay. The flag also had, I know this is shocking, a cross on it. Okay. So hold on. They're permitting rainbow flags, gay flags, flags for all kinds of causes and people of all kinds of backgrounds, but they're going to ban the flag because it has a cross on it? The city rejected the request, saying the flag would amount to government endorsement of religion. The group sued, arguing that the city's decision violated its right to free speech. if you're going to allow people who are not religious to display their cause, their flag, not Christian. You can't discriminate against Christians. It's just wrong. And it's unconstitutional to discriminate against Camp Constitution. A unanimous three-judge panel of the United States Court of Appeals of the First Circuit in Boston ruled for the city, largely on the ground that the government is entitled to choose the messages it endorses. Okay, but guess who's taken up the case on behalf of Camp Constitution? The ACLU! Okay, good for them. It's something not entirely hypocritical and stupid from their point of view. The point about this is, if you're going to have the display different flags, you can't single out one flag and say, because it's religious, this is not allowed. And if you have that flag flying up there for 1 hour, then it hardly constitutes government endorsement of religion or of any one religion. And the idea that this amounts to a violation of the Establishment Clause, that people would think, oh, now Boston is officially an established Christian city because they have the flag for Constitution and has a cross on it. Again, there's no commandment or hint in the Constitution that government officials are supposed to react like vampires to the sight of a cross. It's just not supposed. They permit garlic up there on a flag? Because that's supposed to scare vampires too. Last week, the group Camp Constitution, it's doing an appeal, gained an important ally, the American Civil Liberties Union, which has often sued to bar religious displays on public property, filed a brief supporting Camp Constitution, saying Boston had violated its free speech rights. We have long expressed concern about government endorsement of religion, said David Cole, ACLU's national legal director. But when the government opens a forum to private speakers, generally, as Boston did here, they can't turn away a speaker or his flag simply because it is religious. The city cannot generally open its flagpole to flags from private, civic, and social groups while excluding otherwise similar groups with religious views, their brief said. Okay, with the ACLU on their side and with this court more sensitive to religious liberty, I think we got a good chance of winning on this one. We will be right back on the MedVet Show.
Your daily dose of debate.
You're trying to stir up some controversy.
The Michael MedVet Show.
Michael Medved Show. Today was an absolutely terrible day on the stock market. I mean, more than normally terrible, because it began to be up and it was up substantially. And it looked like, okay, we're going to make up some of these losses we've had recently. And then, boom, crashed. It's down another 400 points. And all of this goes to the point that markets go up, markets go down, and it might be a terrific time to feel a little bit of encouragement and to see what outside the stock market, in terms of private placements, sort of separate investments, what kind of thing is available. And I would urge you to go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Our Crowd, or you can go to ourcrowd.com. This is an international company now. I was just speaking to my brother, who is the head of the company. This is no Como Brothers deal here, because for the Medved brothers, none of us are involved in anything unseemly. And Jonathan, my brother, has put together this remarkably successful assemblage of high-tech startups that have done extraordinarily well for people who place even very modest investments in them. And our crowd is primarily startups, high-tech startups in Israel, but more and more in the United States, in Western Europe, and yes, in some of Israel's new Abraham Accords business associates in the Arab world. It's a great, great company, and it costs you nothing to check out some of their information about the technological startups that are happening now, even some of them related to the pandemic and to other health challenges and industrial challenges and more. And again, totally free. It's fascinating. Go to ourcrowd.com and read about what's going on and this particular opportunity. Okay, speaking of stuff that is going on, there is bad news and kind of good news on the COVID-19 front. And I say that in spite of all of the panic about the Omicron variant and what it means. It has arrived in the United States. People are waiting for the first case. And guess where the first case has been uncovered and exposed? The CDC has identified the first case of Omicron in the U.S. It's in California. And does that mean it will stay contained in California? No. No. Here's what Dr. Fauci at the White House today had to say about the individual who is been diagnosed with this variant. This is clip 16A.
The California and San Francisco Departments of Public Health and the CDC have confirmed that a recent case of COVID-19 among an individual in California was caused by the Omicron variant. Genomic sequencing was conducted at the University of California at San Francisco, and the sequence was confirmed at the CDC as being consistent with the Omicron variant. So I know there are a lot of questions, but here's what we know right now. The individual was a traveler who returned from South Africa on November the 22nd and tested positive on November the 29th. The individual is self-quarantining, and all close contacts have been contacted, and all close contacts thus far have tested negative. The individual was fully vaccinated and experienced mild symptoms, which are improving at this point. So this is the first confirmed case of COVID-19 caused by the Omicron variant detected in the United States. And as all of you know, because we've been discussing this, we knew that it was just a matter of time before the first case of Omicron would be detected in the United States.
Okay, and then he concluded his comments with basically stuff that we've heard before, but it's worth taking to heart, seems to me, a 16B.
And as you know, we know, I've been saying it, and my colleagues on the medical team and others have been saying it, we know what we need to do to protect people. Get vaccinated if you're not already vaccinated. Get boosted if you've been vaccinated for more than 6 months with an mRNA or 2 months with J&J. And all the other things we've been talking about getting your children vaccinated, masking in indoor congregate settings, etc.
Okay. The potential good news actually comes from South Africa. Dr. Miyusi Mizukawa of South Africa reports about the impact the Omicron variant is having in that nation already. This is clip 17.
What we see on the ground is that we're seeing younger patients, and we're seeing milder cases of Omicron. But also, what we've noted is that the people that are being hospitalized are largely unvaccinated. About 90% of those are unvaccinated. There is nothing much that we see beyond what we have seen with the Delta variant.
Okay, and part of what he also says is that the symptoms have been mild, milder than the Delta variant that we've received so far. So who knows where this is going to go? And again, I think that part of what is making people panic so much is people are so ready to put this entire thing behind us, hoping that again, we can get back to something like normal existence. But then again, there's all kinds of warnings of future fights that might have nothing to do even with the Omicron variant or with COVID altogether. What are they going to be about? Well, let Justice Sotomayor, speaking from the bench today during the questioning by the court of the presentations on the abortion issue. This is clip 7.
The sponsors of this bill, the House bill in Mississippi, said we're doing it because we have new justices. The newest ban that Mississippi has put in place, the 6-week ban, the Senate sponsor said we're doing it because we have new justices on the Supreme Court. Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts? I don't see how it is possible.
Okay. Basically, what she is suggesting is that the question isn't what the Constitution said or didn't say. Because as we've been talking about all day, and it's one thing that I think people understand right now, this entire idea that the Constitution includes a right to abortion, if you want the Constitution to include a right to abortion, you could do a constitutional amendment. Could compromise on it, work on it. You'd never get it through, or unlikely to get it through. But this idea, did anyone ask that kind of question when Roe was adjudicated in 1973? Moore, some powerful speeches about Build Back Better, Budget Buster, coming up. Michael Medved show, there is so much, I mean, so very, very much about the disputes that are in the news. And it's not just about statues and alleged hate crimes and the meaning of the Confederacy or the meaning of Roe v. Wade. It's everything. We live in the shadow of history. And it's really important if you're going to have a meaningful, in perspective view of what's going on today to understand the issues that shaped yesterday and the personalities and the events. And aside from that, it's just a great, incredible story, the story of America. That's why I'm so proud of the History Store and of the fact that now you can join as a MedHead Plus member and get free streaming of all of our history shows, all of them. Covering the earliest days of settlement in North America, right down to some of the issues of the origins of the Middle East conflict and the revolution and the Civil War and much more. And that's available to you free for the cost of 22 cents a day. That's all. And that gives you MedHead membership. You can get access to the show anytime you want it or access to any of the material on the History Store. Check it out. Go to MedvedHistoryStore.com. You can see the kind of material we're talking about. And go to MichaelMedved.com and sign up at a greatly reduced price for a MedHead Plus membership. President Biden today was speaking on this, on his budget-busting Build Back Better bill. And he made an announcement that I think is going to cause him some trouble. Here's what he said, and he said it before. Clip 8.
The fact is the Build Back Better plan is fiscally responsible. It's the first major piece of legislation in more than a decade that is not only fully paid for, but will generate more than $100 billion in deficit reduction.
Okay, it's going to reduce the deficit? Nobody believes that. When you talk about producing deficit reduction, the Congressional Budget Office, which is nonpartisan, says no. And this is magical thinking, and it's straining the gullibility of the American people.
$100 billion.
And then he also had, I think, the ultimate solution for the supply chain problems. Listen, this is clip 15.
I've also spoken with the CEOs of UPS and FedEx, which are on track to deliver more packages than ever. Now, I can't promise that every person will get every gift they want on time. Only Santa Claus can keep that promise. But there are items every year that sell out that are hard to find. Some of you moms and dads may remember Cabbage Patch Kids back in the 80s or Beanie Babies in the 90s or other toys that have run out at Christmas time in past years when there was no supply chain problem. But we're heading into a holiday season in very strong shape.
Okay, very strong shape. I hope the deliveries all come in on time and all work well and nobody has difficulties. But to suggest that Santa Claus is going to be to blame if the supply chain crisis doesn't work. Yeah, that's right. Blame it on the overweight white guy in a red suit, right? That's not fair. And then there's this, which I think is also interesting. Kyle Rittenhouse is sort of emerged from his trial, and he's doing interviews. And he did one with a group called News Nation. And you may remember a guy named Lynn Wood, who was a partner in various legal projects with Sidney Powell, and has been a real leader of the Stop the Steal movement. And at one point, he had been trying to represent Kyle Rittenhouse, but he didn't want it. So this is what Kyle Rittenhouse had to say about the one and only Lynn Wood. Listen, this is clip 10.
She fired him because she found out that the money was in the pot but wasn't being put towards bail?
We fired him because he was like going on with all this QAnon and election fraud stuff and just stuff we don't agree with.
And so it was his political views that led to you firing Lynn Wood?
A mixture of a little bit of that.
And what else was in the mix?
Just how he is as a person.
And what does that mean?
He's insane.
And for those who still take this seriously, okay, Kyle Rittenhouse, way to go. He's somebody who is mature and direct in his answers and effective in not only as a witness, but as a witness to the occasional insanity of others. And then there is, right now, the ongoing battles within the Republican Party are something that we're going to have to give a little bit of attention to, because it's so destructive. The opportunities now, I think, are particularly meaningful, because for Republicans to continue their momentum, don't you think it should include Republicans actually working together and not necessarily running against each other, and maybe treating each other with a little bit more respect? Yeah, I think that's a good way to face it. And one good way to face this holiday season is to see a really, really wonderful pro-family movie. It's from a very acclaimed filmmaker and actor named Kenneth Branagh, and I think it's going to be a major Oscar contender, one of the best movies of this year. Listen.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
Writer-director Kenneth Branagh reaches back to his childhood memories of growing up in Northern Ireland in the midst of civil strife between Catholics and Protestants in the remarkable new film Belfast, now playing in theaters.
We're living in a civil war. This is the time to make a new start.
Was that our side that Donald left?
There is no our side and their side in our street. Well, there didn't used to be anyway.
The little boy at the center of the story is played by Jude Hill, one of the more remarkable child actors of recent years, while Catriona Balfe and Jamie Dornan play his charismatic and deeply loving parents. Lyrical, touching, and shot mostly in gorgeous black and white, this is a film about family and survival, not politics, with some tough language and street violence earning a PG-13 rating. Belfast should be a significant Oscar contender in numerous categories. 4 stars for one of the most memorable films of 2021. Yeah, and Belfast, I haven't spoken to anyone yet who is deeply disappointed or disappointed at all with this wonderful movie. It's mostly in black and white with some colors that light up the action, not like Wizard of Oz where it goes from color to black and white. This goes to living color when the little boy goes in to see movies that ignite his imagination, and this one may ignite yours. Tomorrow we will be talking about an ideal holiday gift that I think it deserves a Medved book review. It's a book of essays all in praise of Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and it includes a series of essays, one of which talks about the role that her stunning and incomparable beauty plays in her public perception. So if you haven't thought about that, well, we'll cover it tomorrow. And yes, and that essay might be short. And what's behind the massive spike in violence inside public schools? It's not just on the streets. It's not just in homeless encampments. Public schools. Why? And an explosion of nooses found in a hotbed of racism. The Stanford University campus? Really? Why? What's behind that? That and much more next time in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.